Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, all you wonderful, wonderful F1 fans around the world. It is race weekend. We have had a weekend off, and we are back. It is the second sprint weekend of the season. We're in Austria. It is the Red Bull Ring. You're hearing my voice. That can only mean two things. One, that my name is Kelsey, and two, you are listening to the newest and most wonderful edition of F101. And as always, we will be starting off with the hot topics. This is everything you need to know in this week of F101 and in the world of F1 in general. And let's start off with AlphaAtari. Will no longer be AlphaAtari as of 2024. They are being rebranded. There's absolutely no confirmation of who's going to be the new sponsor, what the new color scheme is going to look like, or anything along that line. It was just officially announced a couple days ago. I'm very excited to see a new sponsor on the track. I'm very curious to see on who it is, if it's going to be an auto manufacturer, if it's going to be potentially a massive clothing company, maybe Nike, maybe Under Armour would be getting into the Formula One scene. This also brings up a couple of questions. Mainly, will they still be the sister team of Red Bull? And with that, will they still be sharing, you know, ideas to a certain extent? Will they be under the thumb of the overall Red Bull umbrella? Are they going to start to branch off on their own? And is this potentially the first step of us having a brand new F1 team in Formula One? If it does, and this is just my mind, if whatever AlphaAtari ends up being is no longer on the umbrella of Red Bull, will this make it easier to open the doors for somebody like, let's say, the Andretti Group to come in and buy the team and totally revamp it and make it their own? Who knows? All I know for a fact is that 2024, there will be a technically quote-unquote new team on the grid, and it's just going to see what kind of dynamic this turns out to be. Next up, everything you need to know. Brand new packages for McLaren is coming out for the Austrian weekend. Now, they're only doing out, this is like their biggest release for the first half of the season. It's about 60% of the overall package for their new car, and it's only going on Lando's car. Now, the reason why we're only seeing it on one car is, let's be honest, Oscar Piastri is doing a good job for a rookie, but you need someone with a little bit more consistency, a little bit more experience, and just that the reliability to get the information you need from the upgraded package, which is why all of it's going on Lando Norris's car. As well as, when these packages come out, you can't just put one piece here, one piece there, one piece on one car, the other pieces on the other car. You don't get consistent enough information on how each piece works as a whole. Because, I mean, you are going to get information on how it works individually, but at the same time, the more important picture is how it works altogether. So everything's going on Lando Norris's car. He's getting new side pods, he's getting a revamped floor, he's getting a new engine cover, and he's getting a modified halo. Now, when it comes to the halo, there are some certain structural things that you cannot change about it. That being the actual structure and the shape and composition of the halo itself. Now, what you can do is you can change a little bit of the aerodynamics on the halo itself. You can add a little bit more curvature to it. You can add a little bit more straight edges so it cuts the wind. I've even heard some rumors of being that there's going to try to kind of add scoops or wings to the halo itself to create just that little bit extra downforce on the car when going around the track. But obviously there is limitations. It is a major, major safety feature on the car. So teams themselves and the FIA, and especially the drivers, I would hope you don't want to mess with this piece of the car as much or as little as possible. It's very important. It keeps the driver safe. We have seen this over the last couple of seasons, where if the halo wasn't there, we wouldn't have some drivers on the course that we have now. With this upgraded package that's going on Lando Norris's car, I do expect him to do very, very well in Austria. I also expect him to do very well in Silverstone next week in the British Grand Prix, mainly because these tracks are, in my opinion, some of the better tracks to do research and develop on new pieces of your car. They're open tracks, they're fast tracks. It gives the opportunity for each team to get the information they need to make a proper evaluation of the bits and pieces they've added and make structural or aerodynamic changes as they see fit. I expect this to be a bit of a turning point for McLaren, that if these pieces turn out to work as well as they had hoped, and all the time and effort has been spent in very good ways, and that they've developed them properly, that you'll start to see McLaren more in the top, obviously top 10, I'm thinking top 5, at least for Norris. More often than not, he'll get a little bit more consistency in the race and in the performance of the car. And lastly, for the hot topics, I think one of the biggest news pieces that have come out, I'm sure some of you have seen it floating around social media, Alpine has sold 24% of the team for $200 million, and it is going to, essentially, it's going to an investment firm made up of a couple of different companies. So the new investment group is called Orto Capital, and it is also combined with Freebird Capital. They are combined partners. These guys bring to the table a ton of experience when it comes to working, especially in the sports world. They're not just kind of a one-off, oh, we work with a couple of guys here, we work with a couple of guys there. They have been known or are involved in the Dallas Cowboys, the Fenway Sports Group. They've also got Wrexham FC and Toulouse FC as well. Now, you may have recognized a couple of those names, obviously the Dallas Cowboys, if you follow any kind of football. And lately, one of the bigger news stories, especially because it's on Netflix, which always helps the popularity of smaller group sports teams, I should say, Wrexham FC. So obviously, you've got two big names that go along with Wrexham FC, and these guys are essentially the face and the media of these groups. And of course, we are talking about Rob McElhaney and obviously Ryan Reynolds. Now, if you don't know who these guys are, you obviously don't have a TV, you don't watch movies. Obviously, we all know who Ryan Reynolds is, star of the Deadpool series, the Green Lantern, we'll call it a flop or experiment, and a lot of cult classic movies. Rob McElhaney is the co-creator of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, as well as another big name that's in this group is Michael B. Jordan. He is one of the almost full partner or majority owner of the Toulouse FC soccer team as well. These guys bring more of the social media coverage and the face of these organization groups. And then the rest of the corporations bring in like the majority of the money. With this purchase, Alpine's stock and net worth officially rises to $900 million. Obviously, with their history that these guys have, that the companies have, the investment group has, this is definitely going to help. It's bringing in extra money for Alpine. They don't really need that much extra money, in my opinion. They've got a solid program that they just need to stick with. I think what this investment group will do mainly is bring in more structure to the management level in Alpine, where you're not replacing CEOs and you're not replacing, you know, directors every couple of years when they're just really essentially learning their job. They need a little bit more time to get into the meat of the project and to really get that proper development. So that's the big news. I do expect, and the money comes in effective immediately. It's not like, oh, we have to wait till next season to get, you know, the investment money for new advertisement, or, you know, we can't spend to the cost cap because we don't get this money till next season. They have the availability of the funds as of when this was signed, and this was done a couple of days ago. So I do expect Alpine to come out with a better upgraded package than what they have now, but closer to the end of the season, more along the lines of what you'll see on the 2024 car. But massive news. I know seeing interviews and reading articles, the drivers themselves, Esteban Ocon and Pierre Gasly, are super stoked to have this investment group along. They just keep saying it's going to bring in a ton of support, a ton of extra sponsors, the extra money for better upgrading and more training and all that kind of stuff. All that kind of fun stuff. So I do hope they put this money to good use, and yeah, expect Alpine to make a bit of an end of season jump in the Constructors' Championships. All right, as we had mentioned at the beginning of the episode, this is the second, I believe it is the second, sprint weekend of the season. So what that means, if you're not familiar with, instead of just having qualifying on Saturday and the race on Sunday and full practice on Friday, everything kind of gets pushed a day ahead. So you still get practice on Friday, but you only get one practice session. So you get one-hour session to get your car in line and in order. And then automatically you're jumping into what essentially is a full qualifying day. So you're still talking about Q1, Q2, and Q3 with the full regulation time. However you place in this qualification is how you will start the race on Sunday. And then all the activities that happen on Saturday, it's like a mini standalone race by itself, extra points, extra performance for the teams. That is a Saturday standalone event by itself. So let's get right into it. Friday qualifying. The weather was a little bit on and off, clouds, a little bit of rain showers, but nothing too spectacular, nothing to bring out intermediate tires, nothing to massively mess up the drivers as well. But what was messing up the drivers this season at Austria? It is a fast track. It is a big elevation. You're climbing 63 meters at the top. That track limit seems to be a little bit of an issue, especially this weekend for qualifying. Q1 alone itself, they had like 23 track limit violations. So let's go over that. What is track limit, violations and penalties? So again, if you haven't, if you don't know, then you don't know, and you're going to learn something right now. Track limit is you see the white lines on the racing surface. The cars have to keep all four tires in those white lines at all times. If you go over the white line by all four tires, you get essentially, you get a strike against you. Okay. If you do this four times, then all of a sudden you're going to get a track limit violation, which adds 5 seconds onto your time. So you have a 5 second penalty. If you do this four more times, you get another 5, and it can essentially just accumulate throughout the race until you have however many minutes or seconds. You serve the penalty when you get your next set of tires. And if you don't stop for tires, that time just gets added on to your time at the very end of the race. Okay, with me so far? But this only happens when all four tires cross the white line. If you do two, if you do one, you're still totally fine. These guys are good at what they do. They are the top 20 drivers in the world in my opinion, not even arguably, but the fastest sport on wheels. Period, including GP, NASCAR, IndyCar, whatever. I think it's the fastest and most detailed sport on wheels. So a lot of these guys don't normally hit track limit penalties more than twice, maybe three times a season. They know what they're doing. They've been on these tracks before, and they know how to handle the cars. Whether it's a new package, old package, you're jumping in after coming away from time off, injury, anything like that. These guys know what they're doing. Except for this weekend for some reason. Like I said, 23 track violations in Q1, it right by itself. And it doesn't have to be a full tire length over. It can literally be as soon as your tire crosses that white line by a millimeter, an inch, a centimeter, anything like that, they're going to pick it up from the sensors on the road and you're going to get dinged. And that's exactly what happened. That being said, that was essentially the entire drama when it came to qualifying. It was a fast qualifying. It was an amazing qualifying. Some guys missed out in Q2 to Q3 by hundredths of a second. Some guys missed it by thousandths of a second. It was a fantastic example of what qualifying should be on a nice, open, fast track. It was very enjoyable to watch. And then it added a lot of drama at the end as well when you've got 2 minutes left and all of a sudden the last lap you did doesn't count because you exceeded track limits. Or the last three laps you've done, you've exceeded track limits, but you didn't know. And that was one of the major issues this weekend from qualifying to the sprint to the actual race is that let's say you go over and you're going to get a penalty. Okay, and you went over the last time you're going to get this penalty was on lap 5, let's say, just conversation sake. You do this on lap 5. The drivers weren't finding out until lap 20 or 25 down the road, which in my opinion is so incredibly unacceptable. The stewards know what they're doing and they should get this stuff done in a timely manner. So these drivers are in a mindset going, okay, I've qualified, I've got this time, I'm going to be good. And then all of a sudden they're informed, hey, your track time's been deleted because 5, 10, 15 laps ago, you went over track limits and you have to do this again. Some guys don't have enough time to get a proper lap time in. Therefore, they're not qualifying as high as they needed to be. Q1, totally uneventful, totally expected of what's going to happen. Your bottom five, you've got Tsunoda in 16th, Joe Guanyu in 17th, Logan Sargeant in 18th, Magnussen and DeVries 19th and 20th. Magnussen and Nick DeVries, they tried their best, and normally Haas is really good when it comes to qualifying. Nico Hülkenberg, the other Haas driver, has definitely been outshining his, you know, co-driver. I think Magnussen did try his best. He just, you know, didn't have that bump. Going into Q2, everything was looking all hunky-dory. Even more track violations, which was ridiculous. By that time, they had hit 48 track violations by the time they hit the middle or end of qualifying two, which is just obscene. It's unheard of and, in my opinion, slightly unacceptable. The weather is not perfect, but it's also not horrible. These guys have been driving the cars as long as they have. They should have been able to figure out what they needed to do in a timely manner to get this fixed. But nevertheless, that's coming from a guy who's doing a podcast from his house and not a professional F1 driver. So, hey, take that opinion at what it is. So Q2 comes along. They're cruising. Weather is nice. They're going fast again. This is where the delayed information of having a track time being disallowed comes into play. Checo Perez, he's had a run of bad luck the last couple of races. He hasn't performed and definitely hasn't qualified nearly as well as he's needed to keep up with Max Verstappen and essentially to keep Mercedes and Ferrari and Aston Martin at bay when it comes to the Constructors' Championships. And this, again, was a perfect example of he did his best at the very last minute, and that came back to bite him in the ass. Perfect example. There is 23 seconds left, if that. He's got a half a lap left to go. Crosses the finish line according to the timing sheet. He is 0.02 of a second behind Max, I think it was. He's made it into Q2 or made it into Q3. He's good to go. Perfect. He's second on the timing sheet. And all of a sudden, nope, track time comes in that the stewards have come in to say, nope, your track time got deleted like two laps ago. This lap doesn't count because it got deleted. You know, The time didn't transfer over, you didn't go fast enough. All of a sudden, with no time left, he can't do anything about it. He's in 15th. That's where he qualifies in Q2, because track limits and a delayed information call to his engineers, which get relayed to him, that he got track limits, he doesn't make it out of Q2. So Perez in 15th, Bottas in 14th, Oscar Piastri in 13th, Esteban Ocon in 12th, George Russell in 11th. He was really, really struggling in qualifying today. He was fighting the car a lot. It wasn't cooperating with him all day, essentially. So he made the best out of a bad situation. 11th is not horrible, but it's not exactly amazing for a Mercedes that up until this race, up until this qualifying moment, was definitely on an uptick. Q3 rolls around, and I think by this point, the guys are starting to figure out where most people are having troubles. And in this qualifying session, turns 8, 9, and 10 were the ones that were really biting the guys in the ass. These were the bigger corners where you carried a lot of speed, where when you turn, you had to compensate for when your car would react to when you turn and how far you were going to take that corner. So they got that figured out, which was fantastic. No more track limit violations in Q3. And these guys were hauling ass. And very, I mean, not surprising, but surprising at the same time, you could really see how well McLaren's upgrades were starting to come into play. All of a sudden, Lando Norris, at one point, he was first in qualifying. He was just hauling. The car was reacting very well. The upgrades were doing what they needed to do. You could tell he was very comfortable and very confident in the car. Unfortunately, he's also driving against Max Verstappen. He's also driving against two Ferraris that were still in there. He's the only Mango left on the track. He's also driving against Lewis Hamilton and Aston Martin as well, which normally for the first 9 races would be a problem for McLaren. today, Aston Martin in qualifying, they didn't have the pace. They seemed to be just a little bit slower. Not that they weren't struggling at times for grip and traction and, you know, track time. They just didn't seem to be, they just didn't have that same get up and go as they've had in the last couple of weeks. No reports have come in on what, if anything, was wrong with the car. They do have a couple of minor upgrades, which could contribute to the slower lap times, but they haven't gotten anything massive for an upgrade. It's a lot of tinkering at this point for them, but definitely Aston Martin was not on the ball today. And on the flip side of that comment, Ferrari is finally on the ball when it came to qualifying. Very strong speed, very strong control, great communication up until that point with the drivers and the engineers, looking very confident, looking very fast, and legitimately looking like a threat to the Red Bull, at least for qualifying times. Now we're going to have to see how well they do in the sprint and in the actual race, but these guys were definitely pushing Max to make sure that he was doing the best that he can. It's Max. He's driving a rocket. He's the golden boy. He can literally do no wrong when it comes to the track time. By the time Q3 was done, he pushed. He was at the front, and he was ahead by, I think it was a half a second or almost a half a second. He puts in one more fast lap just to kind of rub it in, and he shaves even more time off it just to prove to everybody else that he is the fastest car at their home track. And yes, the Austrian Grand Prix, or the Red Bull Ring as it's known, is technically it is Red Bull Racing's home rink or home track. Red Bull does own it. The owner of Red Bull back in the day, Dietrich Mateschitz, bought the track specifically for Red Bull Racing. So it's kind of a coming home party for Red Bull every year. Top 10 for Q3. We've got Max in 1, Leclerc in 2, Sainz in 3. Norris ended up being 4th in qualifying. Fantastic result. Very exciting for him. Hamilton in 5th, Stroll in 6th, Alonso in 7th. Stroll showing a little bit more confidence and a little bit more reliability and consistency in his qualifying and his racing. That also being said, Alonso didn't exactly have the best qualifying, so it was the best of, you know, the best and the worst of both worlds. It just happened to end up like that, so it's kind of making Stroll look better than he actually is. Hülkenberg in 8th, Gasly in 9th, and Alex Albon rounds out the top 10. So that's how qualifying went on Friday, and that's for the actual race on Sunday. So now you take a break, you're done for the day, no more qualifying, and now park firma rules come into play as well, just one extra time. They can't touch the cars for a certain amount of time. They still get tested for gas, they still get making sure you can't break any rules, all that sorts of things, and then Saturday morning comes around. Saturday morning comes around, and the weather took a turn for the worse to a certain extent. The track was definitely wet, it wasn't soaking, and it was time to make that decision on whether you wanted slicks or you wanted intermediate tires. But as the morning and the afternoon went along, morning for us, afternoon for them, the track started to naturally dry out. Track temperature was 35 degrees, so it was drying out quite quickly, which is fantastic for the drivers. And again, it made for an extraordinarily fast track again for a much shorter qualifying time. So the format for the sprint weekend is as follows. They have what's called a sprint shootout. So now this is a totally separate qualifying for the race that will happen, the sprint race, Saturday afternoon. So what this qualifying is, it is still quality 1, 2, and 3, just like you would for a regular race for Sunday. But the times are drastically shorter. They're not 15, 10, and 12 minutes respectively. We're talking 10. I think it's like 8 and 7. Like, they're drastically short. It's supposed to be a sprint shootout. So you're supposed to have a shorter amount of time to get your car ready, but at the same time, you're also moving a lot more. It makes the day kind of click on because you've got qualifying and the race the same day. Now, with this shortened amount of time, if you're not used to it, it can induce a little bit of driver panic. Now, when I say driver panic, it's not the fact that they're not going to be ready on time. It's that they are not used, some drivers are still not used to the fact that you have about half the time to get your car ready with warm-up laps and out laps, and if you screw up your hot lap, you don't necessarily, or you might not have enough time to do another one. So it can induce driver panic, as in they have to rush the preparation of the car and the tires while on the track. And you could see that a little bit with the shootout on Saturday morning because the track wasn't awesome. These guys were a little bit rushed, and then a lot more track limit violations happened again for qualifying. It went from 48, it just kept going up during qualifying 1, 2, and 3. These guys were trying to put in these fast lap times, which they know how to do, and it just, it's like those track limits had a magnetic field just pulling the cars to the edge of the course the entire time. Which also means if you're going off the track, which means you're burning your tires up a lot faster, you can still go in for new sets of tires whenever you want if you deem you have enough time. So do you do nothing but softs? Do you do ultra softs, which they can pull out every once in a while? They are the softest compound. They also give you the best grip. But with the weather as it is, a lot of the guys decide to go to soft or mediums, which means some of the heavier footed and more deteriorating cars, like some Aston Martins will just blow through tires like there's no tomorrow. Mercedes doesn't necessarily have the best tire management some days. They were going through a few more sets of tires than they normally would. Haas, another team, they were blowing through tires like there's no tomorrow. It makes you make mistakes is essentially what it was. And you could see in the qualifying times which guys were making the mistakes and which guys had the tire management and the maturity level of it. So bottom five for the sprint shootout. Now this is still 16th to 20th. You've got Joe Guanyu in 16th. 17th is Oscar Piastri. 19th is Bottas, and 20th is Logan Sargeant. Okay, those guys you normally see, minus Bottas every once in a while, you see out of Q1. But you'll also notice that I skipped number 18. And you got to be asking yourself, well, who was number 18 that, you know, just didn't get out of Q1? When this man has bad days, he has bad days. And when he has bad days, he never blames himself or takes credit for it, or I shouldn't say credit, takes responsibility for it. He blames strategy, or blames the tires, or blames the team, or fuck, blames the car, blames the weather, blames take your pick. And that's right, we're talking about the, and now in my opinion officially from hearing his comments, we are talking about the princess of Formula One, Lewis Hamilton, 18th in qualifying. It was not a great day for him at all. He couldn't control the car wasn't stopping properly, it was just a bad weekend. And instead of chalking it up to it being a bad weekend, you know what he does? On the radio, when they say, yeah, we're out, we're 18th, we didn't make it, instead of being like, oh, sorry, guys, you know, I'll try harder, or let's get together, we'll figure this out, we have the whole weekend to go, something uplifting and encouraging as a professional athlete should to a team, no, he blames the tire usage. So essentially what he was doing in his roundabout political way is blaming everybody else and blaming the tires for what he had on the car. For tire usage. Oh, well, what does that mean? You didn't control the tires properly, you ran through them too fast, or someone gave you the wrong set of tires, or you know what, they didn't listen to you and they gave you what the numbers told you to for tires. Essentially, he was just blaming other people for his early exit, which I don't agree with. And yeah, so he's out 18th, which is totally unlike him. I do expect to see him to bounce back through the actual weekend. You know, sometimes qualifying for these veterans is not always awesome, but the driving intelligence and the driving experience for the longer races definitely helps them. Going into Q2 and Q3, there was no track limit violations. It was amazing. These guys, again, were hauling, but they were learning from their mistakes in Q1 and from qualifying the day before, so they were braking a little early. Or maybe they weren't taking the corners nearly as fast. It made qualifying smoother for the drivers. It made a lot less guesswork for the stewards and for the drivers as well, going, well, we have to go back and check. Did he go over track limits? Did he not? It made it a little bit more flowy and a little less stressful. Q2 ended. Alex Albon in 11th, Pierre Gasly in 12th, Yuki Tsunoda in 13th, De Vries in 14th, and George Russell didn't actually go out for Q2. There was an issue with his vehicle. He spent the entire time, which was about 8 minutes. He spent the entire 8 minutes in the garage. They were working on his car, so no time for him. So he will start 15th on the sprint race that same day. Q3, more of the same. The faster got fastest. Top 10, Max Verstappen in 1, Checo Perez in 2, Lando Norris in 3rd. A again, that McLaren, or yeah, the McLaren second day qualifying speed, again, super smooth, super consistent. You didn't hear any complaints. You could go on to the camera where you follow an individual driver on F1 TV. You followed him for, you know, the 12 or the, you know, 10, 15 minute qualifying time. Nothing but positive remarks, nothing but structural, like, hey, going to mode A, B, C, whatever the case it was. It sounded really good. It drove really well. So he's really on pace. Nico Hülkenberg in fourth. Carlos Sainz in fifth. Alonso in sixth. Stroll in seventh. Esteban Ocon in eighth. Leclerc is in ninth. And K-Mag is 10th for Q3. It was great to see. It really set up a really, really exciting actual sprint race, which would have been later that afternoon. So now we get to the sprint race. It's an amazing race. I like the race. I didn't like it last season to begin with, but it's starting to grow on me. I like the excitement. I like the extra points that it adds to the Constructors' Championships. I like the points that it adds to the Drivers' Championships. It makes it just as competitive as a regular race, just obviously a lot shorter. So this race, 24 laps, top 8 get points instead of the top 10. So top 8 drivers. First person gets 8 points, then 7, then 6, then 5, then 4, then 3, all the way down to number 8 where they get 1 point. So it adds a little bit more tension, adds a little bit more excitement, adds a little bit more anxiety to the drivers going, you can't just be top 10 because 9 and 10 get no points. It may be a confidence boost that you go from the back of the pack to 9th or 10th, which normally would get your team points, which would get you points, but not in the sprint. You have to be in the top 8. So you see some drivers taking a little bit more risks than you normally would see. You'll see teammates battling a little bit more than they should potentially, just because the points may not be a lot, but it's still fewer points up for grabs. So you really see the competition and the competitiveness come out in the drivers. And you saw that competitiveness, you saw the elbows come out, and you saw the, not quite the fuck you attitude, but the hey, I'm here too attitude. With the top two drivers, with the pole and the second place, Max and Checo, they were battling. Checo came out super aggressive, ends up passing Max at the very beginning, and they go back and forth for the first couple of corners, at least into turn one, all the way up into turn three. And it was Max complaining that he got pushed off the track, which, in my opinion, did he actually get pushed off the track? Yes. Did he embellish it a little bit by making sure he didn't touch Perez? In my opinion, yes, he did. And then you hear the radio with Max complaining, what is this guy doing? Like, what the fuck is Checo doing? And, or saying that Checo pushed me off the track onto the grass, and you can hear him complaining. And then you hear Checo going, oh, what's wrong with Max? Like that total just, you know what, you may be the number one in the world, but I'm still your teammate, I'm still here to compete, and just that little bit of extra, like, fuck you, just turned up just a little bit. Make that attitude come out, and make Max work for being first in the sprint race. Unfortunately for Checo, that didn't take very long for that to happen. I think it was 2 corners later, and then Max was in the lead again. But showing that glimpse of, hey, I'm not just here to be a second seat driver, I'm not just here to work through my bad races, and I'm here to win, I'm here to get points, I'm here to compete. It was very, very, it was awesome to see Checo get that confidence back. I also think that it is amazing, and it is well needed, and it also makes for, in my opinion, a healthy work environment when you have competition within and between your two drivers. Now, I still think it has to be respectful competition, but competition is never a bad thing. Just because Max is the golden boy doesn't mean that he has to have everything handed to him. If his teammate decides that I'm going to win this race or I'm going to make you work for it, well, then guess what? You actually have to work for it, and you have to, you know, deserve the win. Not that he doesn't deserve his wins, but it's nice to see him get pushed from Checo a little bit more often than he has. Another driver that was really nice to see him get a little bit of grit between his teeth because he's got some new upgrades. Again, Lando Norris doing amazing in the McLaren. Unfortunately for him, coming into the first corner, he did get kind of boxed out and he hit his anti-stall. So his car, it didn't stop, but it essentially slowed down like a lot. He ended up going from third or fourth to all the way down to like 12th or 13th. That part of the race for him was absolutely atrocious. Again, or not again, I'm not blaming him because of it. I think it was definitely something that is out of his control. But to see him fight back and not give up with his upgrades is what you need to see Lando Norris do more often than not. He was challenging the Ferraris. He was pushing them to the pace at some point. He caught up to them. You know, they ended up passing him. He didn't quite make it up into the top eight, but he was challenging the upper level cars when he was able to challenge them. He didn't just lay down and die. He was pushing the car to the limits, and it was great to see. It really was. Even though the sprint race was only 24 laps, it is a very short one that equals the 100 kilometers. There was still a ton of passing on this track. This is why, and one of the main reasons why I absolutely love the Red Bull Ring. It is made for speed. It is also made for a ton of passing. There's only maybe one section where you can't pass very easily. It would be like a Monaco section of the track. But the remainder of the track, it's wide open. It's fast. The elevation, the decline, the angles, it's amazing. You're hitting top speed of over 300 kilometers an hour. And you can hit those corners and maybe only downshift twice. So you're in sixth instead of eighth. So you're carrying that pace. You're carrying that speed. And it just makes for a much more exciting race. And especially when it comes to the sprint race, you blink and it's over. It's only 24 laps. It was only, I think it was 35 minutes, if that. And you're done. Track times, you're looking at 107, 108. So 24 laps later, you're done. You're definitely done in less than an hour. Very uneventful. No crashes. Tons of passing. Fantastic to watch. Really good introduction for any of you out there, or if you haven't seen a full Formula One race, or if you've got someone who, you know, wants to get into it or wants to watch it, but it's really intimidating and really complicated, I would recommend having them watch or sit down with them and watch a sprint race. It's not that long, super easy to understand. Top eight goes as follows. Max in one, Perez in second, Sainz in third, Stroll in fourth, Alonso in fifth, Hulkenberg in sixth, Esteban Ocon in seventh, and George Russell tops it out at eighth. So with the sprint events over and done with, the guys can now officially turn and focus on the main event. And yes, that is what we're talking about next, the main event. It's race Sunday. It is the Austrian Grand Prix at the Red Bull Ring. It is round 10. We are looking at 71 laps. 10 turns, distance of 4.31 kilometers per lap, top speed of 324.7 kilometers an hour. Fastest lap is 1 minute 5.61. That was done in 2020 by Carlos Sainz. I love this race. I absolutely love this race. Weather was perfect, in my opinion. Perfect race temperature, a little bit overcast, no wind, no rain, but it just that perfect, perfect race weather. Everyone's lined up in their qualifying list that they got from the Friday before. So if you remember, they did all their qualifying Friday morning for the Sunday race. So now everyone's in their spots. And as an expression goes, it was lights out and away we go. And they were hauling ass off the beat. And it wasn't just Max. It was Leclerc. Charles Leclerc came out of that box hot in that Ferrari. He was putting the gears to Max wheel to wheel. And you can see a couple of pictures. There is centimeters and millimeters between these tires. That is how close these guys are going. They're going too wide around the corners. They're also exchanging leads and defending and all that kind of amazing race synchronicity. It was fantastic. Now, I mean, that only lasted like three corners and before Max just pulled away as he normally did. But within those three corners, it was absolutely exciting. It is what Formula One racing should be when everyone's on an equal playing field. But then again, three corners, straight stretch. We all know that the Red Bull carries a lot more speed, front end and straight line speed than the Ferrari does. Ferrari is more of a angled corner type car. They do better in the more technical races like Monaco, where Red Bull does better in places like Spa, Coda, here in Austria. But, I mean, it's Max driving a rocket, so he just pulled away. And that was essentially the last time we saw him for the entire race. But I think it was more of an interesting race without Max in it, just because everyone was still battling for points and for position. Everyone was mixed in with everybody other than the top three guys. And it was, you know, Haas is racing everybody, and the McLarens were in there, and Aston Martin was getting mixed up in there. There was a little bit of a DRS train for maybe four laps at the most out of 71. But after that, it's a long enough track where you may get a DRS train of two or three cars for about half the track, and then you've got opportunity to pass, and then you've got opportunity to, you know, get your elbows out, play some defense, and just make a very exciting race, not only for us to watch, but for the drivers to drive. It's been said across the grid that this is one of the favorite tracks on the circuit for the drivers themselves, just because it's so much fun, it's so wide open, and it's so fast. Everybody did very well, except for, unfortunately, lap 13, Nico Hülkenberg. He did not finish his car, or he didn't finish the race. He had a technical malfunction. He lost power to the engine, and then all of a sudden, the car starts to smoke. Now, it did not catch on fire that we were shown on TV, at least, and all the feeds, and especially from his car camera, if you are a subscriber to F1 TV, there were no flames. It was just a ton of smoke. Post-race reports just still said that it was a mechanical issue and potentially electrical, but we haven't heard 100% what needed to get swapped out, what failed, or anything like that. I do expect that report to come out in the next couple of days, not necessarily from the F1, but Haas is really good on keeping up on their social media and keeping their fans informed of what's happening, so I'm sure we'll hear about that in the next couple of days. Because of the way the track is set up and for how much thought has gone into it, generally speaking, the Austrian Grand Prix is the least drama-filled race that there is all season. Now, and I say drama-filled in this sense that there was a yellow flag at the beginning of the race. It was one lap in. Yuki Tsunoda ended up essentially rear-ending another car and got part of his front wing torn off, and that's about as much drama as you got. They had to clear the track off for debris, and that was it. Everybody behaved themselves. There was no spin-outs. Because the way the track is laid out, you don't generally see people going really wide in a corner, again, unless there's an accident, unless they get hit and lose traction. So it's a racer's race. I keep saying this, I keep harping on it, but because I love this track so much, I don't mind. The way it's set up, the speed, the cornering, the elevation, it's all just that perfect combination, and it showed. There is more passing and overtaking and defensive driving in a very good and constructive way this race than I have seen all season, probably combined. Everyone's passing everybody. Everyone's taking that opportunity to pass or at least make an attempt to and put pressure on. These guys aren't just making positions just because someone else went to go get a new set of tires. Generally, that does come into play. Pit stop time is 22 seconds in Austria, so it's one of the longer ones. But you weren't seeing massive position changes because someone went to go get tires. It was all on-track excitement. It was all on-track skill, which made this race amazing to watch. 71 laps is a long race. I don't care what track you're on. I don't care how perfect the weather is. It's still a long race to watch. And if you get a boring race, and I'm going to use Monaco in my opinion for this example, when you get Monaco, it's not 71 laps, but it is boring because nobody can pass unless a driver doesn't pay attention and hits a wall. And that's essentially all you're looking for, is someone to not pay attention. It's a boring fucking race where you're in Austria, it's 71 laps. That should be, okay, there's going to be a lull in the action at some point. There wasn't. There, in my opinion, there never is, unless there's a red flag because of weather or an accident. This track always provides entertainment. It always provides really good racing opportunities for everybody. Some things to learn, some things that you need to work on. It's fantastic and very entertaining to watch. And I think because most of the overtaking takes place in the mid-grid, because the top five are always just gone, especially this season. When they pull away from the pack, they're just gone. They end up lapping everybody, which is not exactly amazing to watch. Yeah, you're watching people pass other people, but it really doesn't mean anything. You're just lapping people. where the majority, if not all of the passing, was in the mid-grid. So we're talking, let's go 10 to 18, 18, 19. All the passing and the exciting driving skill was on display within those guys. The 18th and 19th drivers were still battling out like they were going for first and second on the grid. It was fantastic to see. It was a lot of skill. It was, oh yeah, it was just fantastic. We're going to fast forward all the way to lap 60 to 62. In my opinion, the most exciting and the best example of Formula One high-end driving that you could possibly see, at least to this part of the season. I'm calling it Checo Perez versus Carlos Sainz. It wasn't just a couple of corners. It was for two full laps. They were within like a hundredth of a second behind each other, beside each other, overtaking on the inside corner, getting passed on the outside corner, defensive driving from both of them, just back and forth and back and forth in a very intelligent, very safe, yet very sportsmanlike and very, I'm going to push you to your limit, you're going to push me to my limit kind of way. It was, you're sitting up at that point. When you hit lap 60 to 62, sometimes you kind of start to wander off, you play on your phone, you're not really paying attention. But with these guys racing the way it was, you're on the edge of your seat the entire time. And Checo is at that point racing for third or fourth. He came all the way back from 15th spot to finish third. Spoiler alert. He didn't end up winning driver of the day. I think he should have, not just because he's a Red Bull driver, but for the fact that the way he drove today to go from 13th to 15th, I think he only gained one, maybe two spots when somebody pitted to get new tires. Everything else was on track driving. It was on track intelligence. It was on track aggressiveness. And what some people, if you ask Carlos Sainz, would call intimidation, which he was asking for a penalty for intimidation. That doesn't fucking happen. You can't get a penalty for intimidating another driver. It's driving, by the way, Carlos. So you can't, that can't happen. But just the determination to see in his driving going, okay, so I put up this much of a fight at the sprint race. I still have to back this up during the actual race itself. It was fantastic. Intelligent decisions, intelligent moves, and showing again he deserves to be in Red Bull. He deserves to get more credit than he's getting because of the type of driver he is. Yeah, he's not going to be beat Max in the constructor or in the drivers' championship this year. He may not even beat him next year or the year after that, okay? But even if he doesn't, he is still one of the best drivers on the grid. But because he's paired with Max as a partner, everybody looks at him as a lesser driver. I don't see him as a lesser driver than Max. Is Max better this year? Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, you could look at it and be like, well, then obviously he's the lesser driver to Max. But if you look at it, he's had a lot tougher of a season than Max has got. Everything has rolled Max's way this year and last year. Checo has definitely had to fight for every point he's gotten. He's never got an easy win. He's never had an easy pole position. Granted, he does make some situations harder on him than he needs to, but he is the working man's driver. He's not the pretty boy that just pulls away with 24 seconds left, or he's got a 24-second distance between the next guy. He works for every single inch that he's got, and he works for every single point that he receives as well. And he's once again proving that he's not just going to go away into the shadow of Max and just be that second driver to gain more points. No, he's here to stay, and I do see him winning a race at some point this year. He's going to break Max's spell, which the sooner the better, I think. It'd be better for the sport and better for Red Bull itself to give Checo that little bit of encouragement and self-confidence that he needs. Now let's move on to Max. After I've said all those things of, you know, he needs to be able to fight against someone to give him a little bit of pressure and effort and all that kind of stuff. It was still Max's weekend. From start to finish, he won. Now, and I don't just mean the race itself. He won everything. Spoiler alert. He won the race. He won the sprint race. He was top of the sprint shootout qualifying times. He was also the top of the racing qualifying, which is why he got pole. The only thing that he did not win was driver of the day. It was his weekend from start to finish. I think if I go back and I think about it and I look at it, the only thing he didn't top was by the end of Q2, he was, I think, second. But he wasn't first. That was literally the only thing that he wasn't first at this entire weekend. The man is absolutely unfucking stoppable. It's a definite combination and a definite showmanship of how dominant he is, how everything is just working in his favor, and how much Red Bull is advancing in their car design, in their technology, in their reliability. Definitely more reliable than last season and the season before. There hasn't been a single hiccup, knock on wood for Red Bull fans. There hasn't been a single hiccup in the car at all this year. There has been some strategy oopses, which generally doesn't happen at all, if ever. And one of the oopses was today where he didn't lead the race, I think, for like six laps. It took him to get back into first. That was literally it. So all in all, I think his world is going pretty good. Dominant again, super easy drive for him. He did hit track limits, but he didn't get a penalty for it. So the team was advising him, hey, slow down here and there. And instead of giving him or giving his engineers a little bit of attitude going, yeah, I know what I'm doing, he actually slowed down. He was actually paying a little bit more attention, took the corners a little bit easier, wasn't pushing nearly as hard as he needed to until the second to last lap. And I know he wants points. I know he wants to be champion, and he's going to be champion. There is no doubt about it. By now, we're almost halfway through the season. He is going to be champion, okay? But this, to me, is, it's a dick move. Lap 70, 69 or 70, Checo Perez has the fastest lap. That's great. If Max does not have the fastest lap, he always asks the time. About four laps to go, he always asks what's the fastest. If the engineer is not paying attention, he will tell him, oh, it's 105, 107, whatever the case may be. And then Max will ask what's his pace. Essentially what he's asking is, do I have the fastest lap? And if I don't, how much faster do I need to go? Sometimes Christian Horner will come on the radio and be like, hey, don't worry about it. We just need you to finish the race first. If it's a bad weather race, like, we just want you to concentrate, keep the car between the lines, bring the car home, you're going to win. Okay. Sometimes that happens, and then he still gets his information and he'll take points away from his own teammate, which is what he did again this race. There is, I think it's two laps left or whatever the case may be. He has such a long lead that he has time to go into the pit lanes, gets a new set of softs, goes out and gets the fastest lap on the last lap of the race. I know you want points because you get one extra point if you get fastest lap. That's a dick move. 100%. That is a, I'm a jock. I'm the captain of the football team. I am the be all and end all of this team. Dick move. I don't think he needed to get the fastest lap. He's got the points. You don't need to prove that you're the fastest. We know you're the fastest. Everyone on the fucking grid knows you're the fastest. I don't think it looks very good to his teammanship. That's even a word. I think he just could have left it and let Checo have it. It's not that big of a deal, man. I know you're that far ahead. You're just kind of cruising, or you're bored, whatever the case may be. But you don't need to get the fastest lap every single race. Now, that being said, if he does get the fastest lap on every single race, he will set a Formula One record because no one's ever done that. If that's what he's shooting for, okay, granted, okay, you want to get it. But at the same time, don't take points away from your fellow driver on your team. Yes, it is technically you versus him, but you're still on the same goddamn team. Be a better teammate, Max. Come on. And that, folks, that was the race. Totally uneventful, which was amazing, minus a little bump at the very beginning. I like seeing drama-less races. No crashes, no collisions, no bumping, no on-track drama from the drivers themselves. It was amazing to see a very entertaining race. I do recommend it for everybody to watch. Here's your top 10 for the race. Max wins again. So Max number one, Leclerc is second. Really, really good race from Ferrari this weekend. There was one little blip in the communication when it came to Carlos Sainz and qualifying, but they got that sorted out. They're getting to be a little bit more reliable, definitely faster than they have been. They're cutting into the time of Red Bull. You can't necessarily tell, but compared to what they were last season and the season before, they are definitely keeping better pace. They're not going to catch Red Bull this season, but they are progressively getting better and better, which is amazing for that team to see. Perez comes in third. Lando Norris, those upgrades, it was his weekend. He got fourth this weekend. You know he wanted to be on the podium. He was 17 seconds behind Perez, so obviously he was not going to catch him in that time. But still, an amazing result for McLaren. Amazing result for Lando Norris. He was super stoked at the end of the race. And that just kind of clarifies and solidifies the fact that the upgrades they've got on the car, they are working the way that they're supposed to, so they're heading in the right direction. Fernando Alonso in fifth, Carlos Sainz in sixth, Russell in seventh, Hamilton in eighth, Stroll in ninth, and Gasly in tenth. Now, I got to clarify one little thing, a little side note. The position that I just told you were not the standings when the race finished. But we're going to get to that in a second, so just hold on. Drivers' Championships. Max Verstappen is ahead with 229 points. Perez is in second with 148. Then Alonso with 131. Hamilton with 106. Sainz in fifth with 82. Leclerc and Russell are both tied with 72 points for sixth and seventh, respectively. Lance Stroll in eighth with 44 points. Esteban Ocon in ninth with 31, and Lando Norris is up now into the top 10 with 24 points. Again, these numbers that I just gave you were not the points by the end of the race. Again, keep that little fact in mind. We're going to get to that in a minute. Constructors' Championships, Red Bull has, I mean, in my opinion, they won it a month and a half ago. They have 377 points on the year. Mercedes is second with 178. Aston Martin right behind them, though, with 175. Ferrari is in fourth with 154. Alpine is in fifth with 47 points. McLaren is in sixth with 29. Haas is still hanging on to that seventh spot with 11 points. Alfa Romeo is in eighth with 9 points. Williams in ninth with 7 points. And good old AlphaTauri is holding up the basement like the good people that they are with 2 points. Now, those standings in the constructors stay the same. Now, the reason why I bring this up is because this brings us into the story of the race. Now, normally it is a racer, performance, or an accident, something along that line. But this story of the race is going to the stewards and the FIA and how they absolutely, and this is going to sound really, not really bad, but if you've got sensitive ears, you might want to cover up. They absolutely made this race into a gigantic clusterfuck. And the reason why I say this is that during the race itself, there were 7 drivers who hit track limit penalties, and those are 5 seconds each. Okay? Those drivers were Hamilton, Tsunoda, Sainz, Albon, Gasly, Magnussen, and Logan Sargeant. Okay? 5 seconds each. Lewis Hamilton got his track limit penalty 15 laps into 71. 15 laps. Okay, I get it. You know the rules, and you're supposed to stay within the guidelines. Okay, that makes fair. Rules are rules, especially in sports. You follow them for a reason. So then you go along the race, and okay, we get the race done in 71 laps, and yay, we're all done. And then an hour and a half later, it comes out, Aston Martin had protested the finishing of the race, because you can protest anything of what happens on the race as long as you have proper merit and good evidence. Okay, it cannot be substantial, it can't be weak evidence. You have to be black and white, this is what they did, and look at it, so on and so forth. So the basis of this protest was Aston Martin had complained that a lot of the other drivers that were ahead of them exceeded track limits, but it wasn't picked up by the stewards. Okay, so that's a fairly fair accusation, and we're calling it accusation at this point. And so they go, the stewards go back, and it's a couple hours later. So then after, when they're done, they're like, oh yeah, we absolutely, we missed we missed a bunch of stuff. We do apologize. So we're going to adjust the times and we're going to adjust the standings and points. 12 more track limit penalties were handed out. 12. And they're 5 seconds each. Okay. So now because they didn't get these penalties to serve during the race, the time just gets added onto their time at the end of the race. So let's go through those. Gasly got another 10 seconds. That's a total of 15. Hamilton got another 10 seconds, which is a total of 15. Sainz got another 10 seconds, which is a total of 15. Logan Sargeant got another 5 seconds, which is a total of 10. Yuki Tsunoda got another 5 seconds, which is a total of 10. Alex Albon got another 10 seconds, which is a total of 15 seconds per driver. Nyck de Vries by himself got 15 seconds worth of penalties. And here's the kicker. Here's what really hurts. Esteban Ocon got 30 seconds worth of track limit penalties added to his time. 30 seconds. How do you miss that during the race? Now, Ocon didn't finish in the top 10, which is still not the point. You missed 30 seconds worth of track limit penalties. How do you do that? Like, how do you miss that much? You read along the article, and there's official documents that you can read. And then another article comes out, another like reporter reports that the stewards recorded, and this is just the F1 race. This is just the race on Sunday. They had to investigate 1,200 track limit violations during the race. 1,200 times 20 drivers went off track. That's ridiculous. That's insane. Also makes more sense on why it took the stewards so long to figure out who got how many penalties and how much. When you read it like that, okay, that makes absolutely sense 100%. That brings up another question for me, or a few questions. Do the rules need to be changed? Does the track need to be updated? Or does the standard of being off track need to change? And by that one, we're going to address the last one first. And by that I mean, is it really useful? Does it really help anybody, really, or hinder anybody to have such a small window of being considered off track? It doesn't really help anybody, because generally where you're going off track is on the apex of a curve when you're coming out or turn. So if you go too far, you definitely give the opportunity of spinning out much higher. It's not a smart thing to go off track. It's there for a reason. But I do think there needs to be a little bit more leeway in where or how far they're going off track before you give them a penalty. Or they need to change, especially with the Austrian Grand Prix, they maybe need to change where they're counting where they go off track limits. Maybe you eliminate track limit penalties on corners 8, 9, and 10. 90% of these penalties happen on those three corners consecutively because it's such a high-speed section of the course. Maybe you just don't count track violations on that part of the course because you're going so freaking fast that even if you go too far off track, you're going to hit the grass or you're going to hit the wall, which nobody wants to do. So maybe they need to look at that, or maybe they need to update the track. And when I say update the track, maybe they don't need to actually change the layout of the track, but instead of putting rumble strips on the side of the course, which kind of, I don't want to say it invites, but it definitely gives that false sense of I can go a little bit further over than I need to, then maybe get away with not getting caught with track limits and I can get a little bit of an advantage or get a proper angle. Maybe instead of that, they take out the bumpers and they put in either gravel or grass. It's not a safety thing to do that, but you definitely hinder the cars going too wide, because if you hit grass, you're going to lose traction. If you hit gravel, it's going to slow you down like there's no tomorrow. Plus, it takes away traction as well. So maybe they need to update those corners. Maybe you add some grass, make it greener, make it a little bit more, you know, viewer friendly. And it would definitely keep the drivers on track more than they are now. Because 1,200 track limit violations, that's just fucking ridiculous. It's also very uncalled for as well. The drivers don't have the excuse of these are new cars anymore. They don't have the excuse of, well, I've got a ton of new upgrades and I'm still learning my car. You are a professional driver. You're with this car year round, all year. You know this car. Or maybe they just need to change the rules somehow, where instead of all four tires going off, maybe it's just two. Make them stay within the track limits. Don't give them so much of a gray area where you can go so far wide that you have to have all four tires off. Maybe it's just two tires. Make them cut that corner short. Because when all things all said and done, 1,200 track violations and a grand total of 1 minute and almost 50 seconds worth of penalties added after the fact is just ridiculous. And I know that doesn't sound like a lot of time, but when it comes to Formula One, when a championship is won by 1/1000th of a second, and all of a sudden you've got almost 2 full minutes of penalties added afterwards spread out, that makes a huge difference. That also makes a huge difference in points for the drivers, for the Constructors Series, and it makes it a little less exciting to watch on our end. You get super excited for your driver. He did really well. And then come to figure out 2 hours later, he got 30 seconds worth of penalties. And he's gone from getting a lot of points for your team and sponsorship money to now he's almost at the bottom of the pack. Like it's not fun. And I think they definitely can do something about it. But if they do, I don't expect them to see it at least until Austria of next year. So at least a full year of deciding what to do. And I'm sure it's not going to be as black and white as, hey, we're doing 1, 2, and 3, and you can't do this anymore because this is what we're putting into place. I'm sure it'll take them a season or two to get this stuff figured out. But until then, they really do seem to be cracking down on track limit violations through the entire year. So maybe the stewards learn something. Maybe the drivers learn something from this race. But unfortunately, that right there is the story of our race. 1,200 track violations investigated and 2 full minutes added after the race, not including what was already happened during the race. But that right there, folks, that is your download. That is your summary. And that is your play-by-play of the Austrian Grand Prix. I love it. It's also got extended to 2030. So this race will be around for a few more years. I hope it keeps getting extensions. It's going to be great. It always is. It's exciting. And I love watching it. Next race, we got the British Grand Prix, round 11. It is the weekend of July 7th, this coming up weekend. In 5 weeks, we've got 4 races. So it is definitely in the heart of Formula One racing season. I am very excited. Race and qualifying up here in Canada is not exactly as early as it was when it came to the Austrian Grand Prix. Qualifying on Saturday is 8 a.m. and the race itself is on Sunday at 8 a.m. Practice back to the regular format. Practice 1, 2, and 3 on the Friday. Now, those are earlier our time. I think the first practice one is at 4 a.m. and then 6 and then 8, I do believe. So if you want to watch the full practice, then you're getting up early. But if you've got the weekend off, or if you've got a PVR, or if you've got, like me, F1 TV, and you can watch it live, the race itself, you're not breaking the bank. You're not losing a bunch of sleep. It's at a reasonable time. Thank God. So with all that being said, I do hope you enjoyed this episode and that you join me next week for everything you need to know about the British Grand Prix.